You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is sponsored by Codify, a California benefit corporation. Visit Codify at www.codify.com. Hello and welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 100 for December 21st, 2016. I'm your host, Chris Webster. On today's show, we talk about being on the past 100 episodes of the CRM Archaeology Podcast and where we're going from here. So sit back, relax, and listen to this fun and lighthearted episode for the holiday break, because the CRM Archaeology Podcast starts right now. Hello and welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 100 for December 21st, 2016. Joining me today are Bill in Arizona.
Hello.
Chris in somewhere in the United States.
Hi, I'm coming in from a very busy coffee shop in Louisville, Kentucky.
Of course you are. All right. And it's Stephen in Calgary.
Hello.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me today. Today, you know, we've blown by every, I guess, podcasting milestone that I hear other podcasts talk about. And it's like, you know, episode 50 kind of thing, maybe 75, you know, the big ones like that. But we didn't do anything like that. I don't think I've ever discussed in, like, as a focus for the episode, what episode we were on. We've done end of the year type stuff, but this is the first time we've kind of focused on the fact that we've done 100 episodes. And I thought it was important to talk about it, because not only have we done 100 episodes, but we're really close to the 4-year mark too. I think we're just going to talk a little bit about, you know, how we got this thing rolling, and how it can move on from there, and maybe what we've gotten out of this, out of doing this podcast, and also talk about some of the people that have been in this, you know, bit come and gone from the podcast as hosts, and go from there. But first, I'd really like to thank Bill and Stephen for being here, because you guys were on episode 1, February 11th, 2013. First, before I get into any of this, did either of you guys think we'd still be doing this in 4 years and hit 100 episodes?
No, I didn't. I guess it's kind of like it's kind of like the characters in episode 1 of Star Wars that are like, as if they would all be in all 8 or 9 or however many they're going to make. Mm-hmm. I mean, who could possibly do that, right? So I guess we're all the Yodas, right? They can live 700 years and still be with the Force.
Yeah. Steven, how about you? Did you think this had any staying power when you first came on episode 1, especially after what you'd heard before that?
I don't know. you know, honestly, I think it's just more of those, like, that sort of thing that we just keep doing, and I have really, I mean, you were always kind of the person with the plan on this, and I just show up.
You're like, if I don't have to do anything, just show up, I'm good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who still won't even take that up.
I know, right? So, well, this is great. I was hoping that this would go for a long time, but my biggest fear wasn't just people and keeping people rolling, because I'll get into that in a minute, why that wasn't really a fear of mine. But my fear was content, honestly. I was like, okay, we got a whole bunch of things. I've got a whole bunch of blog posts I can talk about. I was really worried about coming up with things every 2 weeks and saying, are we going to have stuff to talk about? But something always comes up, you know, something always rolls around, and we always end up having a pretty decent episode. I honestly don't think we've really had, aside from possibly this one, I don't think we've ever had any real filler episodes that were just like, what are you guys talking about? That was a waste of my time. You know, some people might have thought a topic was a waste of their time, but I don't think we have. I think it's been interesting the whole way through. We've managed to get interviews and always have some stuff that maybe wasn't CRM related. And that's partly because I didn't have anywhere to put that show, so I just threw it into here. But I hope some people got something out of it, getting a little different information. But let's go back real quick, though, to sort of the beginning of where all this started. And it was right about now-ish that I had finished, now 4 years ago in December, that I had finished my, I had stopped doing, I think I'd hit a year's worth of episodes, and I can't even remember how often I was doing it, maybe every 2 weeks, but I decided I wanted a news style podcast that was just, you know, there's the archaeology podcast, which every week they come out with three or four news stories from around the world in archaeology. And I wanted something that was like that, but more CRM specific. And what they do is they just gather news sources from different things around the world. And sometimes they're newspapers, sometimes they're, you know, they're journal articles, sometimes they're, you know, whatever they can find. And it sounds like they sort of rewrite it a little bit in a form of like a 2-minute summary of the article. And they have one person just reading that. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And I want to do the same thing for CRM Archaeology, except I was terrible at it. I had a Google News search set up and I would try to find, you know, keywords and try to find CRM related projects and news around the country, around the United States. And then I would just read the article and it was so boring. And before, before we started recording today, Stephen, you told me when I first contacted you about this podcast that you went back and listened to some of those just to see, what I was all about and what I was doing. And yet you still agreed to come on the show.
yeah, that was one of those, like, we might need to go back and have you talk about why you invited those of us that you invited.
I will.
But when you invited me, I was like, you know, because I don't listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to maybe one on a semi-regular basis. And other than that, it's, you know, like, I will, you know, pick and choose individual episodes of an individual podcast. So listening to a podcast is not something I normally do, mm-hmm. partly because when I have time to listen to things, I don't want to listen to people talking. You know, usually it's music or something like that.
Or fountain pens.
Yeah, so, like, you know, I conceptually knew what a podcast was, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, well, you know, he's already been doing it. Let's see what this thing's about. And so I pulled up, you know, like, the first episode, and it was you reading the news directly in a monotone voice, and I'm just like, oh shit,
yeah,
what am I to? It's like, I really had no idea what to expect for that first episode. It was really just like, am I gonna have to read things? What are we doing?
Am I gonna have to read things? That's awesome. Okay. You guys know why I started that first one, because I wanted a CRM news thing, but that wasn't the type of podcast I wanted from the get-go. I just didn't have the online social network, which I needed at the time, to really pull together the kind of show I really wanted to do, which is this one. Because my model for all of this, honestly, for the CRM Archaeology podcast, and if any of you listen to this other show, you can hear it once I tell you this, but it's the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. It's a group of five people. They've had a couple people drop in and out, but it's a group of about five panelists, for lack of a better word. Three of them are brothers, and one of the brothers he's a neurologist at the University of Yale. He teaches there, and he's a neurosurgeon there. And they run the New England Skeptical Society, and they started this Science and Skepticism podcast. And this is kind of the format. You know, they have a host who's kind of the guy who leads things along, but he's by no means like the focus of the show. He just kind of starts things off and does the editing and all that stuff. And then the four of them, they just talk about different things throughout the course of an episode, and they have a really good rapport and they get along really well. So that's the only thing I haven't been able to do with this one. No, I'm just kidding, guys. So anyway, my thinking was, I want to find, you know, 4 to 7-ish people that can, you know, and I wanted a high number of people, because I knew with CRM Archaeology that people wouldn't always be available. So I always wanted at least like 3 or 4 on the recording. So I'd get a whole bunch of them involved and then just put out the call every 2 weeks and say who can make it. And that's pretty much what we stuck with, although it's always ended up being mostly the same people every time, which is great as well. So I went online, I was getting more involved in Twitter, and reading more blogs, and I wanted some people who were already putting themselves out there, because for some reason people hear podcasting and they get a little gun shy because they don't want their opinions out in the world for other people to hear. So I wanted people who were already doing that. So the first episode included, aside from myself, of course, Russell, Aline Willems, Ashley Morton, Sarah Head, Doug Rocks McQueen, and Bill White. And so Doug is usually with us. He's just not with us today. So he's still on the show. Sarah left the show. It's probably 2 years ago now. Because she started doing her own episode, her own show, Archaeological Fantasies, which was the first show that we brought in, that we developed, I guess solely under the auspices of the Archaeology Podcast Network. When we developed that, that was kind of the first new show. So Sarah's doing that. Ashley just got super busy with stuff. She got a new job and she got different things going on. So she had to step back. And then Russell, same thing with him. But Russell actually did another show, the Archaeotech Podcast, for a little while before he dropped out as well. But we kept that one going. Chris and I are doing that now. So anyway, that was how we started it. And if you go back and look at those first episodes, you know, it's been relatively consistent throughout the last 4 years on the hosts that we've had. You know, Bill and Steve have been on a lot of episodes. Doug's been on a lot of episodes. And then, you know, as the other people dropped off, I started, you know, I'd make a call for other people occasionally. And that's when we brought on Sonia. So Sonia became after doing a few episodes as a guest, we brought Sonia on as a permanent host. And then also after working with Chris Sims in China Lake in Ridgecrest last year, California, and him helping me out and restarting the Archaeotech podcast that we now do together. And Chris has got his own podcast as well, Go Dig a Hole. We brought Chris on. So that brought me back up to about five people that we could consistently call on to do the show in order to get, you know, three or four for every recording. So, and as Steven's mentioning in the background, we have had one other, actually I would say two other relatively consistent guests. One who's been on quite a few shows is Ruckus. I'm a little sad I don't hear him now, but, Steven's cat Ruckus is a world international cat of mystery, I think, at this point. And and then also Bill's children, who have kind of grown up with the podcast, have been on the show a lot as well. So although Bill, your kids have kind of featured in the little Easter eggs at the end sometimes, like just a few episodes ago.
Oh yeah, usually.
Yeah,
I mean, thinking back on it, my son was just a little toddler when we started doing the podcast, and my daughter wasn't even born yet, and now she'll be four in February. So
nice.
Yeah, pretty interesting development there.
Nice. So anyway, that's kind of how we got started. You know, it's been relatively the same all throughout the last 4 years once we kind of hit our groove and we got it going. We've had a whole bunch of interviews, and we've had I think some of my favorite episodes are the ones where we just talk about a subject and we just get going. Because this is another reason why I looked for the types of people that I did. I wanted people that had a lot of experience, but also weren't afraid to express their opinion, and more importantly, weren't afraid to disagree with me, which Bill and Steven do on a regular basis. So, which I appreciate, because you don't want to just, you know, you don't want to just have a talk into an echo chamber. You know what I mean? So I love the fact that we all have very different opinions on a lot of these things, which just shows people when they're working that, you know, they might be working for a company and they've been there for 6 or 7 years and they're like, oh, this is the way we've always done things. And I'm hoping they listen to our podcast and find out that we can't even agree on things because we've worked all over the place and we've worked everywhere. So I definitely appreciate those opinions. So, all right, Chris, you were a relatively late addition to the podcast. I think you're our most recent addition to the podcast. What was your impression of the show and podcasting before you came on, and what was your reaction when I asked you to come onto this show? Because I mean, you've been on a number of episodes now already, so.
Yeah, I think I started coming onto the CRM Archaeology podcast in the, like, episode numbers, like, 40s or 50s, maybe. And that was, like, I don't know, almost 2 years ago. And it was neat how things progressed, because it was, like, at first, I knew you through Twitter, and I went to, like, the Twitter meetup at the SAAs in Austin, Texas. And I feel like I got like more and more active in the online archaeology community that was like kind of hovering around in various social media. And then through there, you know, I did the profile in CRM, and then you asked me to come on to the CRM Archaeology podcast, and things went from there. And I ended up, you know, after a while of, you know, talking and trading messages back and forth, you sent me a message one day randomly, and you're like, hey, you want to come out and work in California? And at the time I was like working during the day at a CRM company in Kentucky and then working at night at a bar, just because like wages kind of suck in the East. And I was like, yeah, I absolutely want to go to California. So, you know, things went from there. And yeah, it was funny. I'm writing a blog piece for Go Dig a Hole that I hope to have out by the time this episode airs. And it just kind of like a retrospective of how at first I had no idea where it was going and like what I would get out of it. And the rewards have just like paid off in spades in some very unexpected ways. And I think we can kind of go around and talk about that after our commercial break coming up here soon.
Yeah, I must have forgotten this. You were at that tweet up in Austin at the SAAs. Man, I don't remember that at all. That's crazy. So many people were there, and Bill's mentioning in the background that that was the best tweet up.
it's
and it really was.
It's probably because we were in a food coma because we went to this food truck lot that was near the tweet up place. Only to get to the tweet-up place and find out that I don't even remember what the name of that place was, but I guess they had their own proprietary food truck that was in the back, and it was by a guy who was on America's Best Chef, and the line, like, so there was a line to get beer inside the place that was normal, and then the line outside to get food at the food truck was just astronomical.
Yeah.
Yeah, Austin's got the food truck thing. I mean, they know what they're doing when it comes to that.
Yeah, no, that was, you're right, that was really good, that was an amazing tweet up. I met so many people for the first time, I think, that I'd only known online and that have become, you know, really good friends since then. And they might be friends I only see at conferences, but every time we get to a conference, it's like, you know, it's like picking right back up where we left off. And I think the podcast has helped to solidify those. And then not only that, but, you know, online relationships through, you know, Twitter, Facebook, and everybody read each other's blogs. So, anyway, Steven's mentioning that was the Liberty in Austin. That's good to give a shout out to them because that was a really good venue. And John organized drink tickets and everything. Like, he bought a whole bunch of drinks, and we only got these little tickets. So, yeah, it was a really good time. But let's take a break real quick, and then we'll come back and reminisce a little more about the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Back in a second. I'm here with Michael Ashley from Codify.com, and we're going to talk about the new photo boards that they're developing and why we need them. Michael, what's important about a photo board, and why does someone have to really think about what they use in the field or in the lab?
You know, Chris, it's interesting when we look at field photos, the way we've been taking them hasn't changed much in the past 100 years. Some people may use the back of a clipboard or paper sheet to provide a clean background, or go to the trouble of using those photo boards with all the letters, but we really need our photos to do a lot. We need a new kind of photo board that can help us achieve consistent color, provide scale, and help us measure things, especially if we're not collecting artifacts and we have just one chance to get it right. Developing a photo board that can do all these things, especially designed for digital photography, well, this is a challenge. It needs to be indestructible, weatherproof, fadeproof, lightweight, portable, and affordable.
So what is Codify developing, and as it says on the website, what makes it magic?
All right, in our lab and field testing, we started with a 10 by 12 inch board, big enough for most artifacts we encounter in the field, but not so big it would be a pain to carry. The board is magic because it has special markers on it that will produce a measurable model in 3D just from taking a few photos, and the object will be magically color balanced by using the board as a background. There's space on the bottom so we can superimpose a digital caption and company logo, plus a space for either physical barcodes or virtual ones to dramatically improve field and lab accessioning of artifacts and samples. So we've already received a lot of suggestions for other boards, so we're releasing a 4x6-inch pocket board in both Imperial and Metric. And we're psyched about our directional arrow, which has both metric and standard scales on it, and will white balance your photos. It's really cool.
So when can people expect to get one of these photo boards, and where can they get them?
All right, well, we're excited to say that we have a limited run in production right now, shipping just in time for holiday gifts. We want to get these in your hands and look forward to your feedback. Chris, what kind of deal can APN listeners get?
All right, well, Codify is offering a great Cyber Monday deal for APN listeners. Just head over to www.codify.com/APN for a discount code that's valid just for you. That's codify.com/APN. Thanks for listening, and now back to the show. All right, we're back. So I guess where I want to go with this is I want to talk, we can talk a little bit about what our you know, our favorite episodes are and what we've liked about the CRM Archaeology Podcast and maybe even what we want to do differently in the future if we could. I'll kick it off. I don't think I have I don't think I have like a single favorite episode, but I have some favorite types of episodes. And for me, it's the ones where we bring in a completely different perspective. Like we brought in Jordan Harbinger from The Art of Charm, which if you just hear that part, you sound like he's such a tool. And he kind of is a little bit. But The Art of Charm podcast gives a lot of skills to both men and women in how they can, network and interact and relate with people around them. And I think it's just a really good tool and resource for people who are professionals in any industry. But then one of my other favorite ones, because it was sort of way out of left field, is I was listening to the Art of Charm podcast and he had on a guest, and the guest just happened, he was talking about dreams and analyzing your dreams. And this guest just happened to mention that he used to be a CRM archaeologist, and he just let that roll by because no one on the Art of Charm podcast knows what that means. And I contacted Jordan and I was like, hey, give me the contact info for that guest. And he did. And then I talked to him and it turns out we've worked for several of the same companies and, you know, in the past, and he's been out of the game for a little while, but he got into writing books about dream analysis and it was really great. I'll try to find that and link to it in the show notes, but it was a really fun off episode. And that was just a little over a year ago, I think, because I remember shooting that episode and then sitting out, Chris, I don't know if you had joined us by then, but we were on the far north eastern edge of the project area on South Range on China Lake. And I remember sitting there for lunch in the middle of nowhere, just like we had no cell phone service out there. We had nothing. And just thinking when he was telling us how he used to sit down at a site and just kind of relax back into not a dream state because he wasn't sleeping, but kind of relax into that sort of mindfulness state, I guess, and just gather, just listen to the sounds around him and imagine what it was like in different time periods.
Yeah. Wanted to interject with I think it's really funny that those are your favorites because those are always the ones where I'm like, why are we talking about this?
Referencing, you know, my earlier point.
And if you notice, those are usually the ones where I'm like, I don't think I can make it on Sunday.
Oh man, both of those ones were great though. That the one where he was talking about doing pretty much meditation at these sites and trying to feel the feeling or whatever. I mean, I've been doing meditation for a long time, but just the idea of sitting in the jungle with bugs, because he was talking about how the mosquitoes would bite him and stuff, and he would just wait. After about 20 minutes, the forest would calm down and the animals would start coming back out and they'd start doing what they were doing. And I was just imagining, you know, mosquitoes just crawling all over me and biting me while I just sit there and wait for all these jungle animals, the birds to start singing the same way and stuff. And I was like, man, you're crazy.
Nice.
I don't think I could do that. But yeah, no, that was a great episode. The Art of Charm one, that was a great episode. I don't think the guy's a tool. I think he has his own niche of what he's doing. But, you know, I thought those were great. I think the ones that, so it's pretty easy for me to say that the ones where we interview Tom King are the best, because that guy's just like, he's just this like sullen DC, you know, guy that's just has, I can only imagine what like trying to throw a birthday party for him would be like, because he's just, it just seems like he's never happy and he's always got a negative opinion, but he's, because he's older, he just doesn't care. So he just says stuff. No, we don't have to, you know, edit anything out. When he curses, he's just, that's what he means. When he says that, that's what he means, right?
Right.
So it's kind of cool to hear someone who has, like, they don't need to have inhibitions because they're already just, like, they've been there. So we did Tom King, like, episode 4, I think, and then just last week he was on again. I think that'll go live, the 7th? So
yeah, that'll be right before this one, so. If you've heard this one, then you've already heard the last Tom King one. And if I'm not mistaken, he started his comments about the Trump administration by saying, we're fucked. And I'm pretty sure those were his first words on the podcast. Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing that we all think. But because, you know, we're like, no, you know, I've got to pay my mortgage for the next 30 years. You know what? He's probably already paid his mortgage off.
Yeah.
He's okay. His kids are grown. He doesn't have to, you know, hold his tongue anymore. He can just say what he actually feels.
Mm-hmm.
So I always like that about him. The other ones that I think, the women in archaeology episodes, I really thought those were great.
Yeah.
Because mainly there really wasn't that kind of perspective, or, you know, I hadn't heard archaeology podcasts take that kind of approach, especially cultural resource management archaeology. So I thought those were really great ones to be part of. And then I think probably my favorite one though of all was Adrian Pratzelis. The guy. It was just interesting to hear him talk and you know what he's doing at Sonoma State and to hear about how he created that. He did not create it. He and his wife and others created it, but they've done a lot of really cool stuff. And it just kind of like, you know, as a graduate student, it opened my mind to what you actually can do at a university. It doesn't have to be the way that it is. It can be different. So to see someone talk about how they did something different, I really like that.
Yeah. No, that was good. And that leads me into another series of my favorite episodes is where we talk about grad school programs. Because I think we've been really nice to some of those people that we interviewed because we all knew, like, listen, dude, you're just not doing it right.
Yeah.
But we tried really nicely to tell them, you know, you need to have more classes on this and these kind of things. But then some places, they just are doing it right. Like the Sonoma State episode I thought was really good. And I hope that people find those episodes when they're, I try to title them in a way that they come up in a Google search result so somebody can hear something from the people running the program about what they might learn there. I like some of those. Yeah.
I've been contacted by professors, or I don't think they're really department heads, but program heads, about what they think, you know, I could look at their curriculum, you know, and it happens after these episodes or after I write one of my perennial, you know, grad schools are failing blog posts, and then all the grad schools grab their, or all the grad students grab their pitchforks and say that I'm crazy and I shouldn't be saying those kind of things about our beloved institution. But sometimes I will get emails or comments from professors who are saying, you know, hey, will you look and see, is this the kind of stuff that you'd like to see, or what can we possibly do? And of course, you know, that's so interesting to think that they would even ask me to look at that, being a graduate school student. But I have looked at some curriculum and seen that there are several programs. In the last 4 years, I've actually noticed more programs having applied archaeology or cultural resource management in their program. So yeah. I don't know if we've been changing it or the fact that they probably are realizing that they should do it. And after 40 years of people saying, hey, we should do this, they're finally doing it. But I think that there are a lot of folks who listen to the podcast. I know there are a lot of professors, well, maybe not a lot, but at least three or four that I've talked to that have recommended our blog post and podcast as course materials. So they're reading this stuff in school and writing comments on my blog or, talking about it. So it is actually getting into universities.
Yeah, well, and that's great because I've heard some similar things. I don't think nearly as much as you, because one of the things that people find you through your blog quite a bit because of your blog posts and the way that you write them, because you write. One of the things that the podcast has done for me is it's made me stop blogging as much. I used to blog quite a bit, which is I think how a lot of us initially got connected. I just find that after, I'm on two or three podcasts like a week, it feels like, at least two a week. And I feel like everything I have to say is just being done audibly. I find that I don't really have the time to sit down and write blog posts anymore, but I might be later on, because now that we have, Chris is editing for us now, that might be freeing up my time a little bit, but, address
for tanking my blog.
Yeah. No shit. Right. but you're the same thing, Chris. I mean, yours is even more of a reason almost not to have a blog, because your podcast like is an actual extension of your blog. You know, I mean, they have the same title and the same subject matter. So that I actually kind of understand a little bit. But I think where I would see your blog, Chris, is as like really extensive show notes. You know what I mean? Like a real in-depth into some other things that you talked about in your podcast, maybe.
Yeah, I usually use my blog as kind of like the long form, like expanded, I don't know, like editorial of whatever podcast I have going on Go Dig a Hole, especially like in the beginning of that podcast. You know, I'm only 14 or 15 episodes in now, but
yeah,
you know, it's been on for a year and I took like, I don't know, like a 6 month hiatus out of it. But so it was like very much tied hand in hand. And now it's just kind of like, hard for me to keep up with blogging, just because I feel like I'm running out of material without, you know, just like regurgitating stuff from the podcast. And as Bill's saying in the chat going on in the background, we kind of have this thing going back and forth where we'll write rebuttals to each other's blog pieces whenever we have like a minor disagreement on, like, you know, a subtly, it's like we basically agree on everything, but there's like some like little subtle nuance to it that we're like, no, actually it's, you know, blah blah blah.
Yeah Sometimes it does feel like we're in a little bit of an echo chamber, isn't it? It's just all of us talking to each other on the internet. But yeah, that's a good point about, you know, the blogging thing, because what made me think about some more stuff about my blog is, you know, I've always told people that want to start a new blog, if they happen to ask me about it, you know, like, what should I do, blah blah blah, the one thing I hate that blog posts always do, because it's inevitable. You'll see the thing, you see the first blog post from anybody is always, oh, I'm going to do this and this and this, and it's going to be amazing. And then they'll write like three or four blog posts and then nothing for 6 months. And then they come back and say, sorry, I haven't been blogging, but I had all these life circumstances, and then there's no content. And then you go another 6 months and then there's another one. Sorry, I haven't been blogging. And it's like, I don't care. You know, I'm here to read an article basically that you wrote. And I'm not here to really concern myself with your life circumstances. I hate to be brutal about that, but that's the way it is. And I've never done that with my blog. I've never kept myself to a schedule. I've never said, I'm going to write a post every week, because I think when you do that, it causes you to just like give fluff content that nobody gives a shit about, because the simple fact is, and it's the same with the podcast, nobody's sitting on the edge of their seat waiting for the next whatever to come out, right? They just have it in a feed, like an RSS feed or something like that. And when it comes out, oh, there it is. Great. But the funny thing is for me, psychologically, is that while I've never thought that way about my blog, I've been, I don't think we've ever missed an episode of the CRMR podcast coming out. I may have been late a couple times, but and due to restrictions on travel and internet, but I've never missed an episode coming out. I've never run a rerun. I've never, you know, done anything like that. And I really feel like having this content come out in a quality way, but in an organized, scheduled fashion, is really important. And especially after we started the network, you know, I was like, I want to have, you know, certain things on certain days and have a nice assortment throughout the week, of different things. So that's how I've kind of thought on that. But with blogging, I don't know if I'll ever blog again. Cause every once in a while I think maybe I should write a blog post about what's on the podcast network this week. And I was like, that's stupid. I'm not going to do that. Yeah, I don't know. Chris.
Yeah. I have to say that I still write, and I just haven't published anything on my blog. And I had the author Brian Fagan, who's just a prolific historian and archaeologist and author. He came to my class one time and just like hung out and talked to us. It was a graduate seminar when I was in grad school at University of Louisville, and I asked him, I was like, how do you put out so much material? Like, how are you so prolific of a writer? And he said this advice that really helped me get through grad school, which was write every day, even if it's just total garbage, stream of consciousness, just drivel, just write every day so that you're always in the habit of, like, you will never get writer's block if you're always in the practice of getting words from your head out onto paper, keyboard, whatever. And so I still do that. Like, I still write like pretty often, and I have just drafts saved on my blog. And it's one of those things where it's like, I'll go back through my drafts every now and then and read through it. And I'll be like, yeah, I don't really want to put that out. I don't feel like, you know, fleshing that one out and just putting that out there. But, you know, it helps me personally, like, kind of organize my thoughts and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I used to actually write more frequently than I do now as well. But I find out that all my writing these days is writing, writing show notes and, proposals and, different things like that. Man, it's just like time has gotten away, which is why I do like the podcast. And I think my ideal situation as an outlet for opinion and comment, is the various podcasts. And I'm glad that we have a number of different ones, so we don't have to bore people with a subject they're not interested into. They can just go to the podcast about that subject if they're interested in it. And I really like that, and I hope people get things out of it. And, you know, I guess the other thing I like about podcasting is people can listen to them in different ways. You know, you can listen to it while you're working, while you're in the car, while you're, you know, on an airplane or something like that, when maybe you don't, in a lot of those cases, you just can't read. I mean, you can't read while you're excavating or surveying, but you can listen to a podcast in a lot of ways. So, and that's, you know, I wish we had those demographics, because I have heard over the years a few people say that they subscribe to the show and they put the show on when they're on their way to work, and they've got three other people in the car who aren't subscribed to the show, probably. And so it'd be interesting. I wish we could say how many listeners we actually have based on that, but it's really difficult to of course calculate those sorts of things. I will say we're going to go to break soon here, because we're going to bring Sonia on after the break. She had a delay, but so we're going to go to the break early so we can have a longer third segment. But I would just like to say, I don't know what the numbers are now, being December 21st, if you're listening to this on the day that it came out, but as of the end of November, because it's the 4th right now as we're recording, but as of the end of November, we were at 38,000 monthly subscribers for the Archaeology Podcast Network, and we're on pace to break 45K easy by the end of December. So that's pretty amazing, and I really appreciate all the shares and retweets and things like that that we get from people, and just people talking about the show, because we literally get nothing for it, no matter how many listeners we have. We get zero revenue. We're getting some in right now, but that's paying for editing. So we all just do this because we love talking about archaeology and educating and getting the information out there. So let's go to break real fast, and we'll expand this topic and talk a little bit about podcasting as public archaeology on the other side of the break. Back in a second.
Hi, everyone. This is Christopher Doerr with Heritage Business International, and here is this week's Heritage Business Tip from the Archive. This week, we look at an important point about negotiating. There are lots of rules of negotiating. The word rules, of course, is in quotes. An important one, though, is not giving something up without getting something you want in return. Negotiation is a two-way street. When you're at the point of negotiating, both sides want to make a deal. If the other side asks for a concession, give it to them, but get something that will help your organization in exchange. If your client needs a quick response, ask if they are willing to pay to have someone on call. If your client asks for a discount, give it to them if they are willing to agree to a guaranteed volume of work. Get the idea? To receive our most up-to-date Heritage Business tips, you can subscribe to our free weekly email at heritagebusiness.org. Until next time, this is Christopher Doerr.
Okay, we're back for our final segment of the show, and we've been joined a little late by Sonia Hoopmacher, who I mentioned was one of our latest installments as a primary host of the CRMR podcast. Sonia, how's it going?
It's going okay. Going okay. Kind of busy, even on a Sunday.
Nice. All right. Well, it's good that you're on now, because one of the things I wanted to talk about in this segment was podcasting as public archaeology and public outreach, and not even public outreach, not just public outreach. I really mean professional outreach, because I feel like we probably don't have a large non-archaeology audience, just because of the title of the show and the subject matter of the show. You know, we gear it towards professionals in CRM archaeology. While we love anyone to listen, it's geared more towards that. So, Sonia, I've heard you talk about different people you've worked with that have mentioned knowing about the show and you know, maybe getting something out of it. And maybe you could just speak to that a little bit, and then maybe what your employees thought when you became a host of the show.
Oh, sure. You know, I've met several archaeological field technicians who, like you were saying before, play the podcast in their cars on their 45-minute drive out to the survey area. I was chatting about the podcast with a friend of ours, brand new friend, I should say. Mm-hmm. He's in his early 30s. He's actually in his early 30s, and he's an engineer. He's like an electrical engineer or something like that. You know, one of those smart people.
Yeah, yeah.
That do things that I don't do. And he was like, so what is this podcast? Because I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I told him about the APN and all the different types of podcasts out there. And he's like, okay. So which one are you on? I said, I'm on the CRM Archaeology podcast. And he's like, okay, I'm going to download a whole bunch of these. And nice. He downloaded them. And I know he listened to at least one because he came back and started asking questions about it.
Nice.
And which is great, because in terms of public education, that means that he got something, even if it was a small bit, he got something out of it, and he came back and he started asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that was really important, because that's what we want to do. We as archaeologists, we tend to kind of live in our own little worlds, and we forget that the public is frequently what funds our work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that we kind of pay them back with a little bit of information, even if it's about the job, you know,
right.
Learning what the job's like, going out and doing a little volunteer survey, like learning how to do a survey,
mm-hmm.
learning how to do a data recovery. Everyone has this romantic, well, I shouldn't say everyone, that's pretty totalitarian, but a lot of people have this idea in their minds that we're all like Indiana Jones, and we go out and have these amazing adventures, and really they don't understand the tedium. And when they come back from these, they're like, you know what? That was really cool. It was not what I expected, going out and just walking all day. That's harder than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm beat. And you're not going to see me tomorrow, because you guys, y'all beat me up today. So I think that, I mean, as a podcast, it's really great for us to not only get the idea out there that, you know, we're not out raping and pillaging and the earth and the archaeological records, and we're actually out doing science. We're using scientific method, and mm-hmm. we are trying to answer questions, and we're trying to return that to them via our network.
Well, and it's good to hear stuff like that, because, you know, a lot of people, because of where and how they're listening to the podcast, they don't comment on episodes very frequently. Because they're out doing stuff, you know, they don't have time. And I'm the same way, you know, I never comment on podcasts that I listen to, because I just don't have the time. And when I'm listening to the episode, I'm not in a position to do it. When I am in a position to do it, I've already forgot about it. So, that I don't mind, but to hear that personally from people, I hear that at conferences all the time. It's nice that you guys talk about it all the time, because on the, on one of our new shows on the APN, the Archaeology Show, episode 4, which I'll link to in the show notes, we interviewed Carol Ellick, who longtime CRMer, done a bunch of different things. She wrote an article for a special issue of the SAA Advances journal. And it was a whole special issue about public education and archaeology. And she did sort of a cultural history of public archaeology, public education in archaeology. And she talked about all these different things going back, you know, 4 decades. People have done to try to educate the public about our field and what we do. And then it was the last part that intrigued me, though, because she's like, where can we go from here? What are the next steps? What are we doing? And she didn't mention podcasting once. And she didn't mention blogging once. She didn't mention any of those things where a lot of people are actually getting a lot of information. And nobody gets information out of a closed business meeting at the SAAs that only a handful of people have access to. You know what I mean? I mean, even the article that she wrote has a very limited reach when it really comes down to it. So and I told her that on the podcast. I was like, you know, I said, I've almost quit giving papers at the SAAs, because the 15 people that are sitting in the room listening to my paper already probably know what I'm going to say, because they're all drinking the Kool-Aid. They wouldn't be sitting there anyway. And if I just put out a podcast about the subject, I can instantly get 5,000 people to hear what I have to say about that topic. And if you look at the wider context of the APN, I can get 40,000 people to hear it. So I feel like this is a venue that, you know, we need to keep going for a really long time. You know, as long as it keeps being informational to people. So I just wanted to hear from some of the other guys on the show, some of your sort of PubArc outreach things you've been involved with that you know the podcast helped out with, or at least your involvement with the podcast. Chris, I think you had a story from the field school you do every summer.
Yeah, I love to take any opportunity I can to brag about my students in the Afar Field School. I've had them on several podcast episodes over on Go Dig a Hole, and I'd say like there's been a ton of really rewarding outcomes for me personally from podcasting, but I would say like number one up there is, and this has happened a handful of times, but just a couple days ago, one of my former students sent me a message, and she got her college acceptance letters back, and she thanked me really deeply for, you know, like my help in getting her basically her top pick of her colleges. And that's like the most meaningful thing to me. And she's not going to pursue archaeology as her major, but the fact that like her involvement in archaeology did something incredibly beneficial for her own future and that I could help out with that, I mean, that just meant like a lot to me. And so, I mean, they're brilliant students. They're really hardworking. And, you know, it's just cool that, you know, podcasting and volunteering, you know, time to do, you know, basically like outreach and education, it benefits, you know, not just us, but, you know, everybody involved, and tangentially, you know, people who hear about it too. So it's a big community service that, you know, we can't really measure very accurately, like how deep it impacts people, but, you know, it's important for us to keep doing it.
Yeah, those are really good points. Last night, so December 3rd, I was at the, I'm in the Civil Air Patrol for Nevada, and we had our 75th anniversary of the Civil Air Patrol, 75th anniversary gala, because the Civil Air Patrol started 75 years ago, actually, on December 1st. And one of the people that spoke at the event was a former cadet, and it was kind of funny, because we had the organizer for the event. It was a kind of a 1940s themed event, gala ball kind of thing, because this was started in the 40s. And so she contacted this like swing dance demonstration group or whatever at the University of Nevada, Reno. And the guy in charge of that just happened to be a former military and former cadet from the Civil Air Patrol like 15 years ago. He went back to college late after serving in the military and then doing some other things. And then he went back for his bachelor's degree. But he got up and she had him get up and speak about what it meant being a cadet. And I think a lot of the same about the podcast, actually, and the impact that we can have, because he talked about all the different stages of his life since he was a cadet when he was in his teens, and how those experiences help shape and form how he was able to deal with other things. And I feel like, you know, I don't feel like we have quite that impact on people, but a lot of the things that we say, you know, might get into somebody's brain and then affect the way that they interact with the people around them and the things that they do on a site in a positive way, hopefully. And then that has a, you know, a ripple effect throughout the field. So, you know, while we're not talking to everybody that's working in serum archaeology, I still meet people that don't even know what a podcast is, let alone our podcast, which is not, you know, too much of a surprise, but, it's getting fewer, that's for sure. It's nice that what we're saying does have an impact on people, positive or negative, and that they carry that through to the other people that they work with. So I think that's and that leads into something I wanted to talk about a little later. But anyway, let's get into that just a little bit. I want to talk about maybe what you guys have as ideas moving forward for the Serum Archaeology Podcast. We've got about 9-10 minutes left in this segment. I've kind of always wanted to go to a weekly show, and I'm not sure that we could pull that off from a host standpoint. We might need to get some more people, but, and I'd like to try out some more segments, but do you guys have, you know, if you had the opportunity to run this podcast, which you pretty much do, because I vaguely just barely run it. It's, you know, what do you think we could do to help change this and make it better? Any suggestions? I'll just leave it open.
I got one. I think maybe we should do more like news type stories where we find people and interview them. And the hardest part about that, I think I know for sure you and I have done it before. And I believe Steven's been involved too, where we find someone and then we call them and it's like a Thursday afternoon.
Right.
But that's like the most difficult thing, finding time, because when we interview other people who aren't on the podcast schedule, we have to really adapt to their schedule.
Yeah.
However, looking back through all these episodes, I do remember a lot of these were ones where we interviewed someone at some random time and it wasn't actually the set time, and it ended up being really great.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's one of the things I've been wanting to do more of as well. And I mean, we hear a lot of stuff in the news, honestly, that people may not even realize have a heavy CRM archaeology component. You know, anytime, and usually those things in the news are controversial. So anytime some development was held up because of blah, 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 if you dig deep, it's probably CRM archaeology. We don't even need to mention the Dakota Access Pipeline. You know, that is, 100% probably the biggest news story of the year for CRM archaeology. So, but you know, it's things like that. And to get people on to talk about it, you're totally right, Bill. I've enjoyed the episodes where we've been able to do that, and it would be nice to be able to do a little more of that. That just means more legwork on our part and more off schedule recording, like you said, because not everybody wants to spend an hour of their morning on a Sunday recording a podcast. You guys are crazy, but most people aren't. So yeah, anyway.
And I remember a time we interviewed Tom Whitley, and he lives in Australia. And I mean, that guy was like, I can't remember. I think it was like 4 or 5 in the morning for him just to be able to record with us.
Right.
I can't remember. It was a ridiculous hour on a Sunday morning, but you know, he told us about what he's doing I can't even remember the Australian university. That's
University of Western Australia, I believe.
Western Australia, that's right. Yeah. I mean, really great stuff going on there. And he used to be a CRMer for a long time in the United States, but that was one that we adjusted our schedule and probably ended up being one of the better podcasts that I can remember.
Yeah, that was really good. And he was talking about some of the CRM in Australia and how that's kind of imploded after a recent regulation, which we should really be paying attention to now. We might have to have him back on. Although I'm pretty sure he's back in the United States, if I remember right. He's left that job and he's back here now. But either way, I agree. It's nice to do those sorts of things, to do those sorts of episodes, and we should do any more. Any other ideas from the host of the show on things you might hear on other podcasts and other ideas we might have?
Yeah. I'd say like my favorite episode, I've got a ton of ones that I just absolutely love, but my favorite one was the one that we recorded from the Great Basin Conference. And even though the sound was just terrible because there was so much background noise, it was just really fun to have everybody sitting in the room together. And I feel like we've got good rapport as it is, but you know, we're all like just cracking each other up the whole time. And we had like, good responses, like direct responses to things that we had heard from the conference and kind of the state of CRM as it is. And I think that that's the kind of take that we get from the smaller regional conferences, because there's a heavier CRM presence at those rather than bigger conferences like SAA. So I don't know, in the future, I'd like to kind of have more in-person gatherings. I know that that's really hard since all of us are far flung, but here in, I guess like a month or so, I'm going to be out in Arkansas with Sonia, and, you know, I'm sure I'm going to end up, you know, working in person with you, Webby, and with Michael Ashley, and hoping to swing through and go see Bill in Tucson later in January, so... You know, there'll be chances for, you know, smaller spinoffs like that. But, you know, whenever we get the chance to have the whole gang back together, I would really love to really seize that opportunity.
Well, at the very least, first off, a comment on the GBAC. I can't believe how many of us were at that. I didn't even know, like, some of you guys were going to be able to go until, like, a week before. And I didn't even know Bill was going to be there until, like, the day before. That was amazing. All the conferences we've all been to, and we meet at the Great Basin Conference in Reno in my backyard. That was ridiculous. But the next time that I can think of that a lot of us are going to be in the same place is the SAAs. So we'll definitely be putting more information about this as it gets closer, but I've got a forum scheduled. It's actually, I've got the time now. It's Thursday evening. It's a Thursday evening session, which actually I think works out because we're going to try to, I'm pretty sure no one from the SAA is listening to this show. We're going to try to bring in some drinks, bring in your own drinks, you know, have a nice casual chat with the host of the APN.
is that a problem with the SAA, or is that maybe one of the reasons why I don't want to go to the SAA? A lot of times?
I don't know. I was thinking at the digital Data Interest Group, I think it was, during their lightning talks, everybody had drinks in there. It was an evening session on a Friday, I think. And it was their business meeting slash lightning talks. And it was great. Everybody just brought in stuff in and had a great time. So we're definitely going to make it an evening out of it. So I think Thursday evening is good. And you guys can all thank me listening to this that want to go to that. I was called by the SAA. Somebody's trying to get their session moved, and they're calling all the people with a Thursday evening session, and they tried to move us to a Saturday morning session. And I was like, no, that's not going to work for our format. So
yeah, I actually wanted to kind of extend an invitation to our listeners to come and talk to us.
Absolutely,
come say hello. We want to hear from you. We don't get to hear from you very often unless you send us a text message or an email or something, and we don't get those very frequently. So if you are a listener and you're attending the SAAs this coming year, we want to interact with you. We want to hear what you're going through in the field. We want to be able to address that on this network and in this podcast in particular. So come talk to us.
Yeah.
We're actually really nice folks.
and I'd like to I'd like to definitely second that, because the more conferences I go to, especially the SAAs, I'm often down in the book room now at a booth or doing something, and because in the book room you literally have to shout everything that you say because it's so loud in there, people end up hearing my voice, and I get people turn around and then they talk to me and say, oh, I recognize your voice from the podcast, and that's fantastic. It's the conferences and those types of interactions are about the only listener input we get on a consistent basis, so it's great, and it really showed me the power of podcasting and our reach too, because the first time that happened to me, I remember it was at the SAAs in Hawaii, in Waikiki, which I believe were just a few months after we started the podcast. And Russell and I were standing in a little convenience store next to our hotel before we went off to the convention center, and we were talking, and the guy in front of us turned around and said, are you on a podcast? And I was like, yeah, and it's only been on for like 3 months. Thanks for listening. So anyway, that was really cool. Steven.
Yeah. I know we are a different podcast network that's not ours. You know, when they do the recording, they do like a live show.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have like an IRC or some sort of chat room going on.
Right.
Where like people can listen and they can and kind of contribute in the chat. But, you know, they're not really talking on podcast. Mm-hmm. And it might be an interesting thing, or maybe a better way of getting feedback, if we can get like a live audience, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
So no. maybe something that's something to explore for future, you know, we can, you know, figure something like that out, give it a test run, see if anybody shows up and go with that.
Well, that's a really good segue into the last thing I wanted to bring up before we end the show for the day. And that is the future of not only the CRM Archaeology Podcast, but the Archaeology Podcast Network. And I say the whole APN because it impacts all the shows on the APN. One of the things that we're planning is that the APN right now is basically a department of DigTech, my CRM firm, because I was too lazy to set up any paperwork for it. So the APN is actually officially owned by DigTech for legal reasons. But what I like to do is either make it its own nonprofit or bring it as a department under something else like Codify or something like that. And one of the big reasons for that is we're kind of planning in the future to have a consolidated working space for not only Codify, but the APN and likely PCS as well, which I've mentioned on the show before. And the reason for that is just so we can have all these resources in one place. And one of the things we eventually want to have with the APN, and Tristan Boyle, our co-founder, has got a really awesome, you know, 5-7 year plan for the APN, where he eventually takes over day-to-day operations of it. And we want to have video, we want to have live podcasting, we want to have all this stuff. And some of that's going to take a studio and a lot more equipment and a lot more subscriptions to different services and things like that. So money, basically. And for that to happen, you know, I don't ever see the APN being super profitable on its own, just because of the way that we've set it up. It's not really intended to be that way. Although we are going to start doing some branded podcasts that won't be branded APN, but we'll be producing them for people. Once we start doing that, then the APN will bring in its own money. But if it's under another department, then it can be funded by those other activities, and we can start doing a lot of those other really fun things. So Chris is mentioning in the chat here, Thursday, March 30th at 6 p.m. That is the time for the forum that we're going to be having, which I say forum because that's the terminology the SAA has. But really, it's going to be as many of our hosts as I can get up on the stage, standing up in front. We're hopefully going to have somebody with a microphone or a recording device out in the audience. And it's just going to be us having a conversation with you, pretty much like we're doing now, about public archaeology and podcasting and things like that. So we'll just let the conversation go wherever it can. And since we're a Thursday night session, we can probably just go as long as we want and until the venue closes us down. But anyway, I think that's it for this episode. Again, we'll have more information on the SAAs coming out as we approach that closer. It's still 4 months away, but we're getting pretty excited about it. So again, thanks for everybody. Thanks everybody for coming on. This has been fantastic, and it's been an awesome almost 4 years and 100 episodes, and I think we can definitely do 100 more. I don't know if you guys can do 100 more. we'll find out.
I was talking to my kids before the show, and I was saying, yeah, if I keep rolling at this rate, I might be able to do 1,000 of these before I die.
Nice.
Depends on how much I drink, though, in the next 20 years.
Right. All right. Well, guys, again, thanks a lot. And thanks for being on the show. And everybody, thanks for listening. And we'll see you in the field. We're back on the Sierra Mark podcast with a little bonus content. We've got a new show starting in January 17th to be exact, and I wanted to interview Jessica, the host, and find out what the show is about, what she's all about, and you know what we're going to expect on this show. If you've heard her interview on the Go Dig a Hole podcast, then you're one step ahead of the game. But otherwise, here's Jessica to talk about her new show. So Jessica, how's it going?
Good. How's it going with you?
Good. So what's the new show going to be called, and what's it about?
Okay, so the new show is called the Heritage Voices Podcast. Just Heritage Voices Podcast. And it's going to be basically about how we can better work with tribes and other descendant communities. So I'm looking at, obviously, you know, the cultural resources community, the heritage community, but also a lot of other government employees that do a lot of work with tribes or other people as well beyond just the archaeology community. But basically, yeah, just looking at how we can better work with these communities through doing interviews with tribal members, with community members, with heritage professionals about their work in tribal consultation, in collaborative ethnography, in indigenous archaeology, all of those kinds of fields.
Well, that sounds great, because we don't have anything like that on the APN right now, so it's going to be a welcome addition to the show lineup. So you don't have a co-host, right? You're going to have interviews once a month with different people to talk about these subjects.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some people that I've been working with pretty regularly on this podcast who will be definitely regular appearances, like Lyle Belenqua. He's a Hopi archaeologist, ethnographer, nice, and river guide. And so there will be potentially co-hosts or regulars in the future for sure.
Okay. Awesome. Well, as I said, the show will be monthly, so look for it then. It's actually the third Tuesday of every month that we're going to release it. And Jessica, why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself and maybe why you decided to start this podcast?
Yeah, of course. So I'm actually a cultural anthropologist. I'm an ethnographer, but I pretty much do most of my work with archaeologists. So people tend to forget that. But
wait, archaeologists do cultural stuff? You lost me. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Right? So, because basically I work in the CRM field. So I do CRM ethnography, or also I do tribal consultation. So I've done basically a lot of work with tribes doing research about places, especially on public lands, that are important to them and how they're important to them and how federal agencies can protect them. And through this process and through all of my friends and colleagues being archaeologists, one thing that definitely has come up quite a bit is that there is very little in terms of training out there right now for tribal consultation and working with tribes in general. It's pretty much getting to be expected, but there's just not a lot of guidance in how to do it well. And so that's really why I wanted to start this podcast, especially because tribal consultation is really expanding, and it's expanding outside of anthropology, outside of anthropologists, to natural resource specialists, managers, and other people who don't have that anthropology background like archaeologists and cultural anthropologists do. So I just wanted to provide a resource to help people better do this work.
Awesome. Well, we've seen how important tribal consultation and just knowledge of tribal issues is for all archaeologists, regardless of your background. In the recent and ongoing horrible things that are happening at the Dakota Access Pipeline. So,
absolutely.
You know, that really kind of brings it home for people. And this is a timely podcast to start educating people about those issues. Do you think, now, Jessica and I didn't talk about this beforehand, so this is totally unscripted, as if somebody couldn't tell. But no, do you think you would include, since you do this for a living, and this is kind of, I wouldn't say this is a kind of thing that's a regular deal in CRM archaeology, obviously. I mean, we get in there, we do the work, we write the report, we go home, right? That we do on the next project. Mm-hmm. Do you think you would ever include any, I guess, training modules where it's just maybe like a 15 minutes at the end of your show or something where you just, you know, talk about something related to what you do to kind of educate people, not outside of an interview, or maybe do that in the context of an interview, like with one of the CRM companies you've worked with or something like that. Do you think you would consider something like that on this show?
Yeah, absolutely. So my first interview that I do is with the Grand Canyon Tribal Program Manager. And one thing that we've specifically talked about is doing a follow-up episode that looks really in depth at the consultation process and how step by step how to do tribal consultation. And that, I mean, that is something that, yes, I would like to incorporate further into later episodes for sure.
Excellent. Well, I encourage everyone to come out and listen to Jessica's show when it comes out. We'll be advertising it on all the APN social media networks, and it will have its very own page on the Archaeology Podcast Network. So Jessica, if anybody has any questions for you regarding this or maybe interview suggestions for you, where can they contact you?
Yeah, so they can contact me a couple different ways. First, through my email, which is jessica@livingheritageanthropology.org. You can also go on the Living Heritage Anthropology website, and there's a bunch of resources there on tribal consultation, the laws, and different aspects there if anyone's looking for more information. You can also find me on Facebook through Living Heritage Anthropology or on Twitter @LivingHeritageA.
Nice. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, and we look forward to the show.
All right. Thank you.
That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/CRM Arc Podcast. If you like the show and want to comment, please do. You can leave comments about this or any other episode on the website or on the iTunes page for the episode. You can also email me at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com or use the contact form on the podcast webpage. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or tweet your questions with the hashtag CRMArcPodcast, or you can tag @ArcPodNet in your tweet. Please share the link to the show wherever you saw it. If you share CRM archaeology-related items on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere else for that matter, be sure to use the hashtag CRMARC so the community can see and comment. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, you can do so on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio. You can also type the name of the podcast into your favorite podcasting app and subscribe that way. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and leave a review of the show. It helps us get noticed so more people can find our podcast and benefit from the content. Also, send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. Also, please consider donating to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Your donations help fund our bandwidth and contribute to our editing costs. Thanks to everyone for joining me this week. Thanks also to the listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you in the field. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.